Yashodhanandana Braja Janaranjana Yashodhanandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Ashtotara Shatashri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayet nashta praeshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki sadasevya sadasevya shrimad bhagavati kata yasya shravana matrena harishchitam samashrayet paramananda pataya Prema Varshaksharayate Sarvada Sarvasevyaya Shri Krishnaya Namostume. So, Hare Krishna. Good morning. The Bhagavatam again. And again and again and again and again, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So today we're in Canto 10, Chapter 22, and we're finishing up the chapter. These are some segue verses, actually, that bring us from where we were to where we will be. And today we're doing 36, 37, and 38. I think 38 must be on the board. Yeah. 38 is on the board, so I'll read 36 and 37, and then we can responsibly do 38. Iti pravala stavaka palapushpa dhalotkarai tarunam nam rashakhanam madhyato yamunam gata. Thus, moving among the trees, whose branches were bent low by their abundance of twigs, fruits, flowers, and leaves, Lord Krishna came to the Yamuna River. Tatraga payayitva pasumrishta shitala shiva tato nripa swayam kopa kamam swadu papur jalam. The cowherd boys let the cows drink the clear, cool, and wholesome water of the Yamuna. O King Parikshit, the cowherd boys themselves also drank that sweet water to their full satisfaction. And text 38. Tasya upavane kamam Chadayanta Pashunripa Krishna Ramav Upaghamya Kshudarta Idam Abruvan Tasya Upavane Kamam Chadayanta Pashunripa Krishna Ramav Upaghamya Kshud arta idam abravan tasya upavane kamam charayanta pashunripa krishna rama upagamya kshud arta idam abravan. Please chant. Tasya upavane kamam charayanta pashunripa krishna rama upagamya kshud artha idam abruvan. And the word for word, tasya, along the Yamuna, upavane, within a small forest, kamam, here and there, as they wished. Chadayantaha, tending. Pashun, the animals. Nripa, O King. Krishna Ramo, Lord Krishna and Lord Ram. Upagamya, approaching. Akshut Artaha, disturbed by hunger. Idam, this. Abruvan, they, the cowherd boys, said. In the translation, then, O King, the cowherd boys began herding the animals in a leisurely way within a small forest along the Yamuna. But soon they became afflicted by hunger and, approaching Krishna and Balaram, spoke as follows. And the purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the cowherd boys were concerned that Krishna would be hungry, and thus they feigned their own hunger so that Krishna and Balaram would make suitable arrangements to eat. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Andeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Shcha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindha Dhinabandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langayate ginim yat kripam tamaham vande shri gurum dinataranam. Nama om Vishnu padaya Krishna prishtaya bhutade shrimate bhakti vedanta swami niti namine. Namaste saraswate deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshatarine vanchakalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaura Tushe Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So, here we are. So, as I said, this is a little bit of a segue in these three verses. So, Krishna has wrapped up his pastime of stealing the clothes of the gopis. And there's been a brief discussion that Shukadeva Goswami says sometime after this pastime that Krishna was walking with the boys in the forest and tending the cows. And so then there's a little brief description of the cowherd boys, and then Krishna glorifies the trees. And the imposition of that is a setup to actually denigrate the brahmanas who the boys are going to go and ask for food on Krishna and Balaram's behalf. So he glorifies the magnanimity of the trees. And then we hear a little bit about the general pastimes of the boys and Krishna and the calves and how, or in the, and the cows rather, and how they have their normal day to day, and they go and they drink from the river. And so this these three verses, they're setting up for a segue into the next chapter, which is where Krishna will give his mercy to the wives of the brahmanas. So, just because this topic really keeps coming up for me in this particular chapter, and it's going to be the main thread, the main thrust of the next chapter, this idea that Krishna, he gives. He's constantly giving. Which, at first glance, it may take a little digging to find out, because this chapter is called the stealing of the gopis' clothes. Krishna's taking. He's taking something, and he put them into such a difficult situation and put them through so many unbelievable circumstances, even and especially from a modern material perspective. It's kind of a difficult chapter to digest. But actually, the ultimate takeaway from this chapter is that Krishna, he was giving something to the gopis by doing that. He was fulfilling their desires, and fulfilling their desires beyond what they even could desire. That was his desire, was to give them more than what they could even ask for. And actually, this is the nature of Krishna, is that he only gives. And the beautiful thing is because this pastime is in the Bhagavatam, by doing that, he's not only giving to the gopis by taking their clothes, by also having this pastime appear in his manifestation as the Bhagavatam, he's also giving something very, very wonderful to all of us as the hearers of the Bhagavatam. And that's actually astounding, because for us, it's really our only hope. Bhagavatam is actually Krishna's most magnanimous manifestation. Many times we hear the holy name is the most magnanimous manifestation of Krishna, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most magnanimous manifestation of Krishna. But actually, our acharyas, they explain that the Bhagavatam, that Krishna Katha, of which the Bhagavatam is the topmost, is the most magnanimous of Krishna's manifestations. Because as Jiva Goswami explains, there can be no kirtanam, there can be no chanting without shravanam. without proper hearing, without understanding the subject matter, without understanding the topic at hand, namely the holy name. How can one chant? And so Krishna, he comes as this Bhagavatam to give us that proper understanding of who we're chanting to and what we're chanting for. Out of his great mercy, there's one verse in the second chapter of the first canto. Krishne swa dhamopagate dharma gyana adibisaha kalo nashta drisham esha puranarko dunodita. So this is spoken, the first three lines are in great lamentation. Krishne swa dhamopagate. Krishna has gone back. He's returned to his abode. The pastimes are finished. Not only has he gone back and returned to his abode, dharma gyana adibisaha, he's taken dharma, he's taken gyan, he's taken everything good in this world with him. Because as we hear, when the acharya leaves, a cloud comes over everyone. When Krishna leaves, when an incarnation leaves, a cloud comes over the world. And when Krishna left, Kali Yuga came over the world. So, dharma gyana adibisaha, he's taken everything good with him. Kalo nashta drisham esha. And for these people, the people who are lost in Kali Yuga, nashta drisha, they have no vision. Because Krishna's gone and he's taken everything with him. What will be there for them? How will they have any hope for anything? Kalo nashta drisham esha puranarko dhunodita. But don't worry, don't worry. At this very moment, as Krishna has left, Vyasadeva, he's written the Bhagavatam, this Purana, this Mahapurana, which has risen like the sun to dispel all darkness. So this is Krishna's very magnanimity, this Bhagavatam. It's his magnanimity, which is coming from his heart. And he's sharing these things with us. Because by telling all of these stories, which there are many, many, many stories in the Bhagavatam, sometimes we get in a bit of tunnel vision and we just think, okay, I'm where I am and I don't have any context and it's hard to put everything together. I've certainly found myself there. And we lose sight on what the Bhagavatam is actually teaching as a whole. Because what Krishna is doing by showing us the Bhagavatam, by showing us the various pastimes he has with his devotees and the exploits of his devotees, he's showing us what could be if we decided to love him. If we decided to make that effort to actually endeavor towards loving Krishna. And he's showing us so many examples of how ecstatic that actually is. How amazing that actually can be. In every imaginable circumstance, whatever motivation one is coming from, whatever, from any place, Krishna is showing that if you're here, if you're thinking from this perspective, the best course of action is to just try to love me. So just to go over some of those, just to kind of unwrap the actual brevity of the statement that I'm trying to make. Srimad Bhagavatam starts with Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker. It starts with Vyasadeva, the writer. But for us, we just look at it like Shukadeva Goswami is the one who spoke it in its fullest form to Maharaj Parikshit and to all the other sages that were there. Actually, even Vyasadeva, because he didn't fully understand what he had written, he went to hear it from Shukadeva Goswami, his own son, who he recited it to, but who had the deepest realization of the topic. And so it starts with Shukadeva, really. And Shukadeva Goswami was an Atmaram. He was fully self-satisfied, situated in Swarupananda, transcendental bliss. And yet the Bhagavatam tells us, Atmaramas chamunayo nirghanta apyurukrame kurvantyahaitukim bhaktim itam bhuta guno hari. Atmaramas chamunaya. So those munis who are fully self-satisfied, who are experiencing the bliss of Brahmananda, nirgranta, they're not bound by anything. But, when they hear these things, itam bhuto guno hari, of Lord Arukrama, when they hear about Hari's glories, about his sweetness, about his pastimes, about his activities, about everything that's in this book, they can't help it. Kurvanti ahaitukim bhaktim. They're compelled to do bhakti. So Shukadeva Goswami, from the situation of perfection, was wrenched out of that situation of perfection by the beauty That is loving reciprocations with Krishna by hearing about these various people. And what to speak of the Atmaramas? We have the other sages at Naimasharanya. They heard it from Suta Goswami. And what did they say? First, they were doing sacrifices for karma. The Bhagavatam clearly explains that to us. Satra Swargaya Lokaya. They were doing satra, which means big yagyas. In Treta Yuga and in Satya Yuga, they have these big yagyas. And in Dwapara Yuga, also at the end, the sages could still come together. And they would do these big yagyas for the benefit of people, so that everybody could be prosperous and happy. And so they themselves could also be prosperous and happy. Swargaya, so they could go to heaven. They were doing all of these things. That's what the sages of Naimasharanya were mainly gathered for. It was in a general way for the benefit of the people, but ultimately, because of the mass conception and the fact that transcendental knowledge is somewhat secret, even in the Vedas, they were doing it for material prosperity, for artha, for dharma maybe, so that everything could stay right, so people would have an opportunity to go to heaven, because if there's no system, then as we see in the West, everything just becomes really degraded really fast and gets worse and worse and worse. So they were doing the Satram Swargaya Lokaya. But they, because in the Puranas, which were being recited to them, there are some bits of Krishna's pastimes there. And so Romaharshan Sutta, the father of Sutta Goswami, he was telling these things amidst all of the Karmakanda, amidst all of the different teachings that are also there in the different Puranas. They then, when they spoke to Sutta Goswami and they asked him, they said, we've been sitting here for 1,000 years and we've been hearing so many things. And honestly, we're satisfied with those things. We don't want to hear about those things anymore. But there's one thing that we still want to hear about. And they spoke this verse. They said, Vayam tu na vitripama uttama shloka vikrame yachtrinvatam rasagyanam swadu swadu pade pade. Vayam tu na vitripama. One thing we're not satisfied with. We are not satisfied at all. Yachtrinvatam rasagyanam, with hearing about Uttama Shloka Vikrame, the pastimes of Lord Krishna. We heard some of them from your father. He told us in the Padma Purana and in the Skanda Purana, there are some descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. He told us those things. And actually, while we're hearing all the other things, our minds were just going back to that. We're tired of hearing this from the Linga Purana, the Shiva Purana, the Karmakanda portions of the Padma Purana. We've heard enough, it's been 1,000 years. But for 10 million more years, you could tell us about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Vayam tu na vitripyama, we never tire of hearing about those things. So these sages, who were not Atmaram, they became engrossed in the Bhagavatam. And we're not even speaking about the stories or the characters of the Bhagavatam proper yet. This is the setup for what Shukadeva Goswami has spoken. Parikshit Maharaj himself, during the speaking, he said, I'm feeling no hunger. Actually, Shukadeva Goswami asked him sometime around the 10th canto, which we could say is maybe day 4 or 5 straight. He said, Maharaj, you're not feeling hungry. You're not feeling tired. You're just sitting here. You've eaten nothing. You're not even taking water. Take some water from the Ganga. Take something. And Parikshit Maharaj said, I'm not eating. I'm eating the nectar of your words. I'm taking this Bhagavatam from you. I'm more full than anyone in the universe. These are the words of Parikshit Maharaj. This is the Bhagavatam. And then we come to the characters in the Bhagavatam. Those are the characters surrounding the Bhagavatam, who are hearing the Bhagavatam. What to speak of who is in the Bhagavatam? What is Krishna giving to them? What is the beauty of the reciprocations that Krishna is having with them? Look at Queen Kunti. What did Queen Kunti say? She said this beautiful, it's a terrifying line actually. What is it? Vipada santuta shashvat. You give me calamities over and over and again. Tear my life apart, in and out, in and out. Just send calamities, Krishna. This is what Queen Kunti is saying. Why? Because her whole relationship was based on loving Krishna and praying to him as her sons and her went through the most terrible things one could imagine. Assassination attempts, the worst shame a Kshatriya could imagine. And Queen Kunti, after it's all said and done, when Krishna is about to go back to Dwarka, she says, you can leave, but you please promise me you won't give me a comfortable situation because I'll forget you. Because this is a devotee's humility. She won't forget him. But such is her love. And such is what she has given to Krishna. Such was the taste that she says, please send more calamities. Send more things like that. Send another house of lack. Send us more shame. Send assassination attempts for my sons. Please send those, because by those I'll remember you. I won't be able to forget you in those times. Because this is the nature of something that is actually the highest. There are two characteristics of something that is superlative. One is that it is unbelievably tasty. Nothing tastes better than it. If you have a favorite food, nothing tastes better than that food to you. If it's cooked by the right person, if everything is just right, you can confidently say, this thing is superlative for me. But the other characteristic of something that is superlative is nothing is more painful than giving it up. So Queen Kunti is praying. She's saying, nothing will be more painful than forgetting you. You can take my life. You can torture me for unlimited eons. But don't let me forget you. This is what Queen Kunti is praying. From this we can infer the depth of love that is in her heart and how much Krishna was actually giving to her. Because that implies that she is feeling something unbelievably deep. And so then, moving further into the first canto, we hear about Bhishma Dev. Why was Bhishma Dev lying on a bed of arrows? What was the point? He was supposed to be the greatest fighter in the world. Nobody on the battlefield of Kurukshetra could touch him. Why was he laying on a bed of arrows? He was tricked. Krishna tricked Bhishma Dev. And therefore, being slighted, Arjuna was able to shoot him while he was focusing on Krishna and put him on that bed of arrows. But this was Bhishma Dev's greatest ecstasy. Because actually, Krishna's trick, Krishna's deception to win the battle of Kurukshetra was the fulfillment of Bhishma Dev's words. Because Krishna loves his devotees so much that whatever his devotee says, he makes come true. So Bhishma Dev said, I will make Krishna take up weapons. And so Krishna took up weapons to please his devotee, to please Bhishma Dev. And then, while he was on that bed of arrows, he went to him so that he could leave his body directly in front of him. So that while Bhishma Dev was leaving his body, Krishna would be there and he would be able to meditate on him and therefore easily attain his desired goal. Such was the gift of Krishna to Bhishma Dev. And then we come to the second canto, because the Bhagavatam is full with these stories, full with stories of Krishna reciprocating in all circumstances with different grades of devotees and different levels of devotees. So we come to the second canto and we come to Lord Brahma, who is the creator of the universe. He manifests everything. He brings everything together and he creates the different species and the different planets and he makes everything work. We can't imagine the level of power that Lord Brahma has. And Lord Brahma, after speaking to Lord Vishnu and becoming empowered, he says, my Lord, I just have one request. You please don't let me become puffed up by all this power. Don't let me become proud with all of this strength and all of this opulence that you've given me. I don't want to forget you. And I'm very afraid that that will happen. I've got a very long life to live and I'm going to be very powerful. So you please don't let me forget you. And Krishna said, don't worry. You meditate on me. And you won't forget me. You won't become overcome by this pride, are the words that Krishna uses. And then what does he do? He becomes proud. And then we have the Brahma Vimohan Leela, because Krishna actually, because he knew the desire of Brahma's heart and he wanted to give him something more, he allowed that pride to be used for Krishna's pastimes. And then he gave him Vrindavan. He gave him something far beyond what his conception was. Previously, his conception was that Vishnu, who had just empowered him to create the universe, was God. But he didn't have any real conception of Krishna. And so Krishna gave him this conception. Such is the nature of Krishna, giving, 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 only wanting to give. And in the third canto, we have Jai and Vijay, who they loved Krishna so much. They loved Lord Vishnu so very much that they were willing to leave Vaikuntha in order to make him happy. In other words, we can say they were willing to go to hell. Because you compare the material world is basically just hell. Samsara is just hell. It's just going around and there's some happiness and then there's really terrible sadness and over, it's all hell. The material world is like hell when compared to the spiritual world. And so they were willing to go to hell. And not only go to hell, but go to hell as the leaders of hell, as the biggest demons in the universe, to give Vishnu a good fight. Such was their love. And what they got in return for that is incomparable. It's incomparable what they received. But you see the interplay between the devotees, Krishna and his devotees. And then in the fourth canto, we have Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj, he didn't even pray really for bhakti. There was some conception there because his mother was a pure devotee. And she said, you should go to the forest and you should worship Vishnu. God is in the forest and he will fulfill your desires if you go to the forest and you do some meditation. And then by some great fortune, somehow or other, Yudhishthira, he met Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, he said, all right, you chant this mantra. If you want your desires to be fulfilled, you chant this mantra and everything will work out. And so, because of the mercy of his mother, who was a pure devotee, and Narada Muni, who was a pure devotee, one of the purest devotees, we can say, most pure, Dhruva Maharaj got the darshan of the Lord, and he got the things that he was asking for. He was able to get a kingdom, even though he no longer wanted it, and more importantly, while ruling that kingdom, he got the company of the Lord. He actually was the ruler of a Vaikuntha planet. Dhruvaloka is a Vaikuntha planet. It's not destroyed when the material universe is destroyed. Though it's in the material world, it just merges or it segments back into Vaikuntha. And then it comes back when the material universe, when the pastime plays out again. So Dhruva Maharaj got such a gift. Even though his desire was just to one-up his father. He just wanted a kingdom like his grandfather's because he wanted to outdo his father. Such is the gift that Krishna has given to his devotee. And then when we come to the fifth canto, in order to understand this one, I'd like to share one verse which is quite amazing. Yan astaya naro rajan na pramadyetakar hichit dhavam nimilyava netre naskalen na pated iha. Yan astaya naro rajan. O king, this is Shukadev speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. He says, O king, Yan Astaya, if somebody accepts this, if any person accepts this process of bhakti yoga, even if he runs forward blindfolded with both of his hands tied behind his back, naskalet, napatitam, he will not fall. He will make no mistakes if he just accepts this process. Nothing bad will come of him. Nothing bad can happen if somebody takes to this bhakti yoga earnestly. And who can be a better example of this than Judd Bharat in the fifth canto? He didn't care for anything. He only cared, I will meditate on Krishna. I will think about Krishna. Even some dacoits came and they took him and they were going to sacrifice him to Durga. They were going to use him to gain some more power so they could have this, you know, dacoit tejas, so they could steal more things and be gundas in a better way. They were going to sacrifice him. And he said, okay, whatever. If that's my Lord's will, whatever. Let it be. I won't resist. I'll just continue meditating. They took him all the way to the sacrificial altar. They tied him up. They got him ready to be sacrificed. One of them took a sword and was ready to cut off his head. They swung the sword. He's still, no problem. It's okay. Everything will be fine. The sword is coming. All of Kali's minions, Kali, all of Durga's minions popped out and ate all of the dacoits, ripped their heads off, drank their blood, destroyed all of them. Judd Bharat just got up and walked off and continued his meditation. If someone takes to this bhakti yoga, there will be no impediments. Actually, the only impediment is the mind. Because if we decide, oh, I can't move forward because of this impediment, then we voluntarily stop doing the process. then that can be the impediment. But we're the only ones who can stop ourselves. There are no actual impediments on this path. If one runs forward blindfolded with his hands tied behind his back, there will be no problems, no impediments, if they take earnestly to this bhakti. So just see how Krishna reciprocated with Judd Bharat, how he protected him, actually, the whole way, and then ultimately all the way up to Prayojan, all the way up to the attainment of his ultimate goal. It was there. And then the sixth canto, we have Ajamil. He didn't even call out to Narayan. He called out to his son. He didn't even... Lochan, your son's name is Narayan. So you should call out. Anyway, you're in a much better position. You're in a much better position than Ajamil was, because you're a Krishna Bhakta. Ajamil was a Karmakandi, and then he fell into some nonsense. And he remembered that Narayan ultimately is the giver of everything, because even the Karmakandis, they worship Narayan. And so he called out at the end of his life with some funny mixed conception, mostly calling out to his son, but because something was there, he was no longer qualified for karma. The Namabas was able to summon the Vishnu Dutas. And he was ultimately liberated. He was given another chance, and then he went to the Prayojan. He developed prema for the Lord and went back to Vaikuntha. And then Vritrasura, whose depth of love was so much that he taunted Indra and he said, "Kill me! You kill me now! You are, Krishna himself gave you the weapon. Vishnu gave you this thunderbolt just to kill me. He told you how to get it. You did the process to do it. And you don't even have faith in that. You kill me. Please kill me." This was Vritrasura's deep, deep desire, because I want to go to Krishna. I want to go to my Lord, to Sankarshan. That was his worshipable deity. Kill me. Kill me now, please. He was begging Indra, fighting with all of his might, knowing he would lose, and seeing the frailty of Indra's faith. He taunted him like that. "You please kill me again." Because there's nothing better, nothing sweeter than attaining Krishna, and nothing more painful than giving that up. And so Vritrasura, he begged, "You please kill me." Such as we can see when we look at these things, when we read into these things, what is actually going on here, we should wonder, what is the depth of love that these people have for this person that we're supposed to be developing? And then the seventh canto, Prahlad. Only fixed on meditating on Krishna, seeing Krishna everywhere, seeing Govinda everywhere. Prahlad is a, as is explained by our acharyas, this pastime, it shows us the depth of the Lord's affection for his devotees as a protector, his bhakta vatsalya, his deep, deep desire to protect his devotees. Because Hiranyakashipu, and again, also to protect the word of his devotees, because Hiranyakashipu, he said, "Okay, you say Vishnu is everywhere. Is he in that pillar?" Sarcastically, saying he can't possibly be in the pillar. He's not. It's a pillar. And Prahlad said, "Yeah, he's everywhere. So he must be there also." And so Hiranyakashipu, to show him that he wasn't in the pillar, to crush his son's faith, struck the pillar with his sword to smash it. And the pillar shook. And a thunderous cracking sound like no one had ever heard came out of the pillar. And then Nisringadev came out and ripped Hiranyakashipu to shreds. Now this is a dovetailing of sorts of Jaya and Vijaya's situation, because this is also either Jaya or Vijaya's, I can't remember which one's, desire to give the Lord a good fight and to have him experience that virarasa. And so Prahlad and Jaya and Vijaya, or Prahlad and Jaya, are coming together to give Krishna this pleasure. And so we can see Prahlad's depth of love. All the demigods, they sent Prahlad forward because they were terrified. Even Lakshmi Devi herself was terrified to approach Nrisimhadev. Brahma said, "Lakshmi, you go. You go talk to him because he's your husband after all. So maybe you can pacify him." And she said, "This is not my husband. I don't know. I don't know who this is. I know Vishnu is my husband, but this, he's so angry. I've never seen this person before. He was my husband before. I won't go." And so then they sent Prahlad. They said, "Well, anyway, you called him. He came because of you only. So you should go. And so Prahlad went, and Nrsingadev immediately picked him up and licked him and put him on his lap and became completely pacified. Why? Because of his deep affection for his pure devotee. We can see the interplay here is very beautiful. We could flush out the details unlimitedly, but just to give some brief description of how we're progressing and what we're going through. And then in the eighth canto, it's hard to decide who to choose when we come to the eighth canto, because on one hand you have Gajendra. And Gajendra, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, was a Kanishta Adhikari. He developed some devotion in his previous life, I believe as Indradyumna, and then he became an elephant because of a curse. And when he was in the grips of Huhu, the crocodile, when he realized, I'm going to lose this battle, I can't win this, I'm not on my own territory, he called out in a general way. He grabbed up a lotus flower. At least that's the way it's painted. I don't know if that's what's said in the Bhagavatam, but anyway, it's a beautiful painting. He grabs up a lotus flower, and he calls out to the Lord. In a general way, our acharyas say, he just says, oh, Supreme Controller, not knowing who the Supreme Controller actually is, but calling out earnestly to the Supreme Controller, you please save me from this. I have no ability to protect myself. I have no strength of my own. It's been taken away from me by this crocodile. By the crocodile of time, I've lost everything. You please save me. And Krishna came, Vishnu came on the back of Garuda and saved him. So even a Kanishta Adhikari, even someone who has very little faith, who has very little conception, he doesn't know the Shastra, if they call out sincerely, if they call out earnestly, Krishna hears and he reciprocates. But is that really the best one in the eighth canto? Because then we have this whole interplay with Aditi, Indra, and Bali. And of the three of them, who can say who is more fortunate? Because Aditi, she got Vamanadeva as her son. And Indra, he got Vamanadeva as a younger brother. And Bali, he got Vamanadeva's foot on his head. And all three of them got to reside with Vamanadeva practically all the time. Because Indra and Aditi, they're up in heaven. They're all reinstated in heaven. And Vamanadeva stayed there. He stayed there, as is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, with Indra. And so Indra was every day able to worship him, and every day able to associate with him. And so Aditi was also there, and she was able to worship her son and love her son. And Bali Maharaj down in Sutala, is it Patala or Sutala? Either one, in the lower regions of the universe, he was supposedly in jail, even though it was like heaven. And Vamanadeva would come all the time and visit him. So of the three of them, with that outcome, with that amazing story, who was more fortunate? Who can really tell? Krishna reciprocated in such a way with all of them that their prema, their love for him, was perfectly, perfectly reciprocated. And then we come to the ninth canto. And in the ninth canto, it's very special because Krishna reveals a huge, huge portion of his heart. We can even say his entire heart. He tells these things to Durvasa Muni. Because Durvasa offended Ambarish Maharaj. This is one of our Jai Baladev's favorite pastimes. You quote it nearly every day. And so he offended, Durvasa Muni offended Ambarish Maharaj. And then he ran and he went to Brahma and he went to Shiva. And then finally he came to Vishnu. And he said, you are the Supreme Controller, you please protect me. I'm being chased by this chakra. It's burning me at every step and it's going to consume me. You please protect me. I surrender to you. He glorifies his holy name. He says, your holy name can protect anyone. All of these things, if they're related to you, they become someone's ultimate benefactor or they're a benediction for someone. And what does Vishnu say? He says, sorry. He says, sorry. I can't do anything. There's nothing I can do. He says, he literally says, I'm powerless. He says, aham bhakta paradino. He says, I am controlled by my bhaktas. Hyasvatantra iva dvija. Indeed, the Vedas, they claim that I'm swatantra, that I'm the controller of everything. That I control myself, that no one is greater than I am. We all know, in Tattva, Krishna is an autocrat. He can do what he likes. And the very nature of God is that there's nothing that can stop God from doing anything. There's no impediment for God's will. But Vishnu here, he says to Durvasa Muni, he says, actually, that's just ontologically the way things work. There's another higher truth that is love, that is prema. And I am aswatantra in regards to that. What my devotees desire, I cannot go against because I love them. I am aswatantra. I have no control over myself. In effect, he's saying, I would give you my mercy. I would forgive you, but I can't. Because that part of me is in the heart of my devotee. It's been given to Ambarish Maharaj, who you offended. And so until he forgives you, I can't do anything about it. He says, Sadubir Grasta Hridayo, I'm captured. I'm haunted, actually, is the word. It's very beautiful to understand these things. Sadubhi Grasta Hridaya. When somebody goes and consults somebody in astrology, if you consult a Vedic astrologer, if you have a bad planet that's really pulling on you, that's affecting your life, you're going through some adversity, say everybody in India is fixated on Shani, Saturn. Say Saturn is having a very strong presence in your life and things aren't going to go well. The astrologer will say you have Graha Grasta, which means you're haunted by that planet. It's haunting your chart right now and things are not going to be easy. So what word does Krishna decide to use here? He says, Sadubhya Grasta Hridaya. I'm completely haunted by my devotees. I'm captured. They have such an influence over me. What can I do? What can I do? I can't do anything. Bhaktair Bhakta Janapriya. What to speak of my devotees? Those who worship my devotees, I love and I care about. And they control me, even by worshiping my devotees. I'm controlled. And then he says this other verse, which is, it's mind-blowing. He says, Sadhavo hridayam ayam, sadhunam hridayam tuham. I'm in the devotee's heart, and they're in my heart. I'm nowhere else, and they're nowhere else. They're situated in me, and I'm situated in them. Mad anyat te najananti, naham te bhyomanagapi. I don't think about anything other than them, and they don't think about anything other than me. And therefore, where can I go? What can I do? I'm captured. Sarubhi grasta hridayo. I'm stuck. I can't help you, Durvasa. You have to go to Ambarish. Such is the love that Vishnu has for Ambarish Maharaj. And then we come to the 10th canto, and my God, that's where we are now. Practically every verse is exclaiming this thing. Practically every verse is explaining this deep, deep love that Krishna has for his devotees, and it's only getting more and more and more and more. It starts out with Bhumi Devi. So she prays, she goes to Lord Brahma, you please help me because there are too many impious kings and their swords and their feet and their armies, they're stepping on my back and they're causing me so much pain. It's such a burden, Brahma. You please help me. And so Brahma says, come, we go to Vishnu. We go to Shvetadvipa and we pray and then he will fix all our problems. So he came and he said, no problem. I will come and we'll fix all of this. So he gives to the demigods, who are Sakama Bhaktas, most of them, maybe not Lord Brahma, but most of the demigods, they have material desires. It's kind of like a mix of Karmakanda and they have some bhakti because you can't help but have bhakti in the heavenly planets because everyone is so pious and it's so obvious and Krishna is there with Indra as Vamana Dev. But it's not their focus. It's not the whole focus of their life. Still, he gives to them. And then Vasudeva and Devaki, he saves them from Kamsa. He becomes their child. And then Nanda and Yashoda, we want to talk about Krishna's parents. Raghupati Upadhyaya, he writes a very beautiful verse. Shrutimapare smritimitare bharatamanye bhajantu bhavabhita ahamihanandam vande yasya linde param brahma yasya linde param brahma. He says some people, Shrutimapare smritimitare, they worship the Shrutis. And some people, they worship the Smritis. Some people read the Vedas. Some people read the Puranas. Bharatam anye. And others, they read this Mahabharat. And they love Mahabharat. Bharatam anye bhajantu bhavabhita. Why do they do this? Ultimately, they do it because they're motivated by fear. Bhavabhita. They're afraid of material existence, and they've heard that these things will give some relief. Ahami Hanandam Vande, but I, if I'm being honest with you, I worship Nanda Maharaj. Why? Yasya Linde Param Brahma, because that same Parabrahman that these people are worshiping in order to get relief from material existence, because they're afraid of what's behind them, like Durvas, they're afraid of the chakra of time chasing them. That same Parabrahman, he's playing in Nanda Maharaj's courtyard like a little child. He's doing all these things in Vrindavan. So Raghupati Upadhyaya, he says, I worship Nanda Maharaj because Krishna is controlled by him, because he's in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. When Nanda Maharaj needs his shoes, he says, hey, Kanha, can you go get my shoes? And Krishna struggles because he's a little baby. He can't even keep the shoes on his head. They fall and everybody laughs at him. So many things like this are happening in Vrindavan because God is not God in Vrindavan. Ontologically, it's there, but nobody knows it. Nobody knows it. They just see him as Krishna. He does funny things and he's very beautiful and he's so amazing. And he lies and he just does all of these crazy things. This is Krishna. And even the demons. What to speak of the Vrajvasis? Even the demons, Lord Brahma, he speaks this beautiful line amidst all of the philosophy of the Brahma Vimohan Leela and his prayers. He says, Sadveshat eva bhutanapi sakula tvam eva deva pita. Sadveshat, just by dressing as a devotee. Bhutana got the destination that she got. She got to become a nurse in the spiritual world. She got what her desire was, even though it wasn't a pure desire because she wanted to kill Krishna. Just by dressing as a devotee, sadveshat, she got this. And not only did she get it, but because of this, all of her family got it. Because Agha and Bhaka were also, they were also Putana's brothers. And they got liberation just because she dressed like a devotee. This is what Lord Brahma has said. Such is the nature of Krishna's giving. He just wants to give and give and give and give. And Kaliya. Kaliya was a Vaishnava Parati. He killed so many. Everything that flew over, every bird that flew over Kaliya Hrad died. Every tree on the bank died. All the grass died. The cowherd boys and calves died when they drank the water. And yet his wives, at the end of Kaliya Leela, they said, what is the great fortune of this snake? He never helped us. The only thing he did was not stop us from doing worship, but he never did anything good in relation to you. We were your devotees. What is his great fortune that he is getting what not even the goddess of fortune could get? Not even the goddess of fortune can get the dust of Krishna's lotus feet, Lakshmi Devi herself. And this Kaliya, all his heads are covered in that dust because you've been dancing on his head for so much time. What is his great fortune? So even Kaliya, even someone so inimical as Kaliya. Now this is the glory of Vaishnav Sangha, because he didn't stop his wives. And because of Garuda, somehow because Garuda was related to the lake, and because he didn't stop his wives from doing their puja, he got the ultimate benefit. But still, just by that, he got more than the goddess of fortune? It's amazing. And it goes on and on and on, and we're going further and further into this. We're seeing more and more of Krishna's heart. We're seeing more and more of what he wants to give to his devotees. We've just read this unbelievably esoteric, deep chapter where Krishna steals the garments of the gopis. And most people, even most devotees, they just read through and they go, okay, yeah, that's kind of wild. You know, it's kind of wild and I can't really process that. So I'll just read some more. May the next one probably be easier because it's not so controversial. So we'll just do that. But we should understand what is Krishna giving. It's so beautiful. He's giving his heart. He's showing his heart. He's showing his devotees' hearts to us. So we can see what we're meant to become like. What we're meant to do. We can see how hopelessly addicted they are to being around this beautiful person. And we can aspire to be like that. And I'm reminded of the verse, Very simple verse that every ISKCON devotee knows practically. I would say 80% of ISKCON devotees know this verse and use it in a million different ways. Ye yatamam prapandyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. So this is Krishna asking us as Gaudiya Vaishnava practitioners. He may be saying this in different ways to different people with different consciousnesses, but for us, he's saying, how will you love me? I've given you so many examples. I've come as the Bhagavatam, and I've laid out so many ways. And I've given you what I think is the best way. I've given you the whole category of best by giving you Vrindavan, and I've also shown you what's the best within the best. Purnottara, Purnottama. I've given you the highest thing. So, but you decide. Just choose one way to love me. Do you want to love me like Queen Kunti? Do you want to love me like Bhishma Dev? Do you want to love me like Judd Barrett? Do you want to love me like Ambarish Maharaj, Vritrasura? Who? Just become attached. Become attached to something. Become attached to the idea of loving me. I'm just waiting for that. Ye yatamam prapandyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. In whatever way you do your bhajan, I'll reciprocate with that. I will reciprocate with that. This is Krishna's message. This is the Bhagavatam. This is the purpose of the Bhagavatam. The inspiration for this class and this presentation, I apologize if it was broken at any particular point, but there's a particular type of logic called Simha Avalokam Nyaya. Simha is a lion, and Avaloka means the way that he walks. So when a lion walks, he takes a few steps. You can actually see this if you look at National Geographic or something. He takes some steps, and even though he's alone, he gazes back. Not out of anxiety, but just to oversee, because lions are they're the king of the jungle. So he's just surveying what he's ruling. So like a lion, when we read Shastra, we should read it like this. We should take some steps, and we should look back and see what we've read. And take some steps and look back and see what we've read. And in this way, everything comes together, and we can understand exactly what's happening where we are based on everything that we've read before. So we take some steps and we look back. So this was more of a summary of what we've come through to get to this particular point, to enter into this 23rd chapter of the 10th canto. So, yadatra skalitam kinchit, vidvamsa purayantu tat, yadatra soshtavam kinchit, tad guru revamenahi. If you've seen some fault here, I apologize for it. Please correct it. You're all learned Vaishnavas. And if you've seen something nice, it's certainly not mine. It's my guru's, somehow or other. Maybe some drops are falling on my head. If there are any questions, comments, or corrections, please. He'll bring the mic.
Thank you for a class, Prabhu. I didn't hear you when you said when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you should take so many steps up and so many steps back. Could you explain that again?
No, we, as a lion, it's called Simha Avalokam Nyaya. So when a lion walks, he takes some steps and he looks over his shoulder. And then he takes some more steps and he looks back over his shoulder. So it's explained that we should read the Shastra like this. We take some steps, we read some verses, we read some chapters, we read a canto, and then we should look back and understand the context of where we are in the placement of the overall story, in the placement of the purpose of the Bhagavatam. So in that way, when we read, we're not just reading, because sometimes, the point is sometimes we pick up the book after a month, or we pick up the book after 6 months, or we pick up the book after 2 years. This happens. And then we're just reading some verses. If you just pick a random chapter and you just read a verse and you have no idea of the context, you don't know where you are, you don't know what you're doing, what will you really gain? Because you don't understand. You'll gain a lot because it's the Bhagavatam. But the more we pour our consciousness into the thing, then the more we can actually understand it and gain the purification and the depth that is available in the text. So not that we take some steps forward and then some steps back, but we glance back. We look back and we say, oh, I don't really understand this particular verse. Well, let me look back and see what were the previous 10 verses speaking about? How can I understand this thing? So in reference to the class today, we glance back at all the other cantos to explain, to understand the 10th canto. And Prabhupada has explained this to us, that in order to understand the 10th canto, we have to thoroughly understand the first 9. We have to have read them and we have to know, what is the purpose? Why is Shukadev Goswami speaking the 10th canto? Why didn't he speak the 10th canto off the bat? Why did he speak the other 9 cantas, which are mostly stories of Vishnu? We're supposed to be Krishna Bhaktas. We're Gaudiya Vaishnavas. So what is this? So Hajjas will say like this, I'm only interested in the 10th canto. Why the first 9? Vishnu Bhakti and Shiva and Daksha and Karmakanda and all these things. People will ask these questions, so we should understand. Because the whole Bhagavatam, what's the verse? Nigama kalpatura ghalitam phalam. It's like a mango. It doesn't have any skin, it doesn't have any seed. Other Puranas, they have Karmakanda, they have some other things, they have you know, things you peel away and you have to find the juice. You know, in the Padma Purana, there's some stuff about Krishna, and particularly the Prabhas Kanda, it has a lot of nectar about devotion in it. But you have to peel away another, 40,000 verses of stuff that we don't care about. It's admitted, that's how the Padma Purana is. That's how most of the Puranas are. But the Bhagavatam, it's like a fruit with no skin and no seed. No matter where you bite it, 7th canto, first canto, take a bite. 10th canto, 12th canto, no matter where, it's nectar, which means it's bhakti. So we should understand why that is like that. How is it like that? And we can only understand that by pouring our consciousness into it at every step, by understanding the flow. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Very wonderful class, especially your chronology of looking back at the different cantos and mentioning. I'm going to look back at this class and study and start, because I think that's one of my obstacles. And I think a lot of people's obstacles is to kind of pick out the main essential pastimes in each canto. And so I really appreciate that point. And also your class of the theme of your class was mentioning all these great Vaishnavas, they had an ocean of obstacles, whether Jatabharta, Ambarish, or even the gopis. Some obstacles were greater than others, but you were describing that they're so addicted to Krishna, so in love with Krishna, that any obstacles they face, they don't allow them to bother them or allow them to sink their bhakti towards Krishna. And so there's a couple of verses from the Bhagavatam points, and maybe you could expand on these. One question I have, one of my favorite quotes regarding your class and these points is that one of my favorite quotes I share with others, it says, ships don't sink because of the water around them. Ships sink because of the water that gets in them. We can't stop everything on the outside, opposition, criticism, rumors, or traffic. But if we allow what's on the outside to get on the inside, then we'll sink into depression, fear, anger, and vengeance. And we see this in the lives of the great Vaishnavas. They don't allow what's on the outside to go on the inside because they have such love for Krishna. They were always discussing Lila Kata Rasi Nishavanam, Samsada Sindhum Ati Dushanam Utita Shor Nanya Plavo Bhagavata Purushota Masa Lila Kata Rasi Nishavanam Antarena. This verse from the 12th canto, chapter 4, verse 40 of the Bhagavatam, it describes exactly it. It says, if you want to cross Samsara Sindhum, the ocean of material existence, then Nanya Plava, what is your boat composed of? Lila Kata Rasini Shavanam Antarena, the nectarian passions of Krishna. They were always discussing the nectarian passions of Krishna. So they allow anything to come in their way or allow them to sink, a drop of obstacles or an ocean of obstacles. And we see in so many pastimes, Hirani Kashyapu, he allowed one drop of obstacles, let them sink. And sometimes that's in our lives. But my question is regarding these difficulties. We see in the Bhagavatam there are obvious difficulties and oblivious difficulties, things that we can know that can allow us to sink, negativity, people who give us some criticism, some opposition. But one verse from the Bhagavatam that's related to this point is from the first canto, chapter 6, verse 34. It describes what types of difficulties allow us to sink, the objects of sense enjoyment. And sense enjoyment can also mean fame, also. Jamai Shreya Shuta Shri Bir Edamana Mandopuman. These materials, sense enjoyment.
Prabhu,
I'm getting to my question, if you don't mind.
You've quoted five verses, and I'm just saying, from my perspective, it's a little hard for me to follow along.
Well, here's the essence of it. I was just missing on points, but here's the essence. These objects of sense enjoyment, like fame, sometimes when we have objects of sense enjoyment, like sense gratification, this is a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, First Canto, Chapter 6.
Can you just
verse 34?
Can you make your question?
Yes, I'm in the process of making my question. If you don't mind, if you could be a little patient, I'm in the process of making my question right now. So this verse says that the objects of sense gratification sometimes allow our consciousness to sink. And so how do we know, for example, that we can know that negativity is allowing us to sink, but how do we know that the sense enjoyment are not allowing to our bhakti to sink, like the desire for fame, or sense gratification, the Facebook, the pornography, so many things. And we may say, oh, I need these things, but at the same time, we have no desire for Lila Katha to discuss the passions of Krishna. Or we only have desire to discuss the passions of Krishna when we're speaking. So how do we know that these objects of sense gratification are not allowing our bhakti to see where we criticize the devotee? Krishna says, one who says they're my devotee is not my devotee. One who says they're the devotees of my devotees are actually my devotees. So that's really bhakti to Krishna, when you're a devotee of his devotees. So how do we know that these objects of sense enjoyment are not allowing us, our consciousness, to sink?
In all honesty, I don't know. I'm a conditioned soul, and I'm surrounded by objects of sense enjoyment. So what to do? I think you should start giving class. That's my observation, because every day you speak for 10 or 15 minutes and you speak really nice things. You quote lots of verses and so many things. Why don't you give class? And then that way you don't have to, at the end of every, it's like you give a mini class at the end of everyone's class. If you just give class, then I think maybe, because it seems like you need that outlet, because it comes out every day. And maybe that way that'll be fulfilled. And then It doesn't need to happen at the end of everyone's class. You think, because you quoted maybe seven or eight verses right there, you know, in the leading up to a question. And sometimes I feel like actually what you're wanting to do is do all of that and share your realizations, which is great. Everybody needs to do that. And we all also want to hear your realizations. And then you just kind of stamp a question on the end of it to make sure it's like kosher, that it was in the Bhagavatam class. And I think it might be better, it's just an idea, if you actually just like give a class once in 2 weeks or something, and then you can do that, you know, you can write it up and you can do all of this. So I think we should end here. It's already 8:45, but it's just an idea. And then that way you don't have to do this, because sometimes it seems like the question is more forced and it's not actually a question. And you answer the question five or six times before you ask the speaker. And then as somebody who's speaking, it's like, well, you know, there's nothing to say. And then it's more like you're giving a little class. So maybe you can do that.
I appreciate your encouragement. After. Actually, a lot of devotees encourage me, but I want to encourage actually all the devotees. All the devotees should give class, because the tendency is that when we give class, we're very attentive. When we don't give class, we're very inattentive. And that's one of my obstacles in Krishna consciousness. That before I came to class, if the speaker didn't gratify my senses, if they weren't a profound speaker, I was very inattentive. But I realized, you're right, everyone who gives class, they're very attentive, including myself. But I say everyone should give class, because you have to force to read the material. I appreciate your encouragement. So I say for everyone, actually, especially the devotees who live here, like Bhakta Dan, he's always coming to Mangal Arati. I don't come to Mangal Arati. I don't live here. So many devotees, Bhakta Dan, obviously all the other devotees who are out of town right now.
Let's stop, Prabhu. So the devotees can go. Gantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Shishi Kishore Kishore Ki Jai, Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Vaishnava Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.